Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It. Today I have Matt Gunnan of Esports One coming to us from Los Angeles. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Nathan. Thank you for having me.
Glad you could be on this show. So what is Esports One? What do you do, and why did you start this business?
Sure. So Esports One, we're an esports company. At our core, we're stats and data analytics. So our goal is to further the esports experience through real-time data, through the use of computer vision, machine learning, motion tracking, and basically a number of different innovative technologies that better facilitate real-time engagement for both the fan, the broadcaster, as well as game publishers and industry fans that are that love esports. And so that everyone at Esports One, we love the space, we love competitive gaming. We love the competition. We love the games themselves. We all play the games. And so Esports One came from, a bunch of individuals that were looking for a way to really kind of better bridge the gap between the esports experience and as well as the fan. So
that's interesting. So what's your background? Were you a competitive gamer, professional gamer, or were you a quant?
No, definitely not a competitive gamer. I am not very good at games in general. I play them all the time, but I would definitely be on the lower end in terms of being good at games. I played traditional sports when I was young, and then got into computers once they started kind of making their way into the mainstream. I was kind of the computer geek as well as like the football jock, as you'd say. So I was like a mix of the two. Growing up, but I went to school in engineering. I graduated with an engineering degree, went on to work for Rackspace out of San Antonio while I was there, stayed there for a couple of years. And then while I was at Rackspace, it was right around the first year of League of Legends kind of world championship. So they were just about to start their inaugural season, and a bunch of the guys that I worked with started getting me into playing League of Legends with them. And so after our shifts, we'd have these 10-hour shifts and during the day, and then our shift would end at 10, 11 o'clock at night. We'd go back to one of the guys' places. They had a house in San Antonio. They had a bunch of computers set up. It was just a big LAN center, basically, and we'd all play League. And so I just got addicted to it. I mean, we played it every day. I got really into it. And so the end of the first season for the League of Legends championships kind of concluded, and there was kind of a big cry out from the community for a resource or a way for fans to keep up with the LCS, keep up with the professional matches. And so I started Leaguepedia at the time, which was the Wikipedia for League of Legends. And the site was kind of started as more of a side project. It was community-based. I ran it, did all the sysadmin myself, all the development myself with a couple of help from a few other people. But then it just took off. The site became, one of the largest esports websites out there. And so I quickly made a decision that, the esports space is where I'm supposed to be. I left my job at Rackspace and, going on probably 7 or 8 years now, haven't looked back.
That's a great story. I love those stories where your passion becomes a business, right? That's really cool. The whole esports space, just if you're not in it or you don't follow it, I don't think people are aware of how huge it is. It's massive. It's like people think it's going to be on par with like NFL or, professional sports. So I guess you're kind of a play on that overall growth. Who are your customers? Are they the players or the league organizers? I don't even know what term I'm looking for here.
Yeah, so like the game publishers, and then so we work with game publishers. We work with event organizers. We're kind of multifaceted in that our goal early on, as we kind of develop out our technology stack and develop out the platform, is to integrate Esports One directly into the broadcast. And so at the broadcast or production level, Esports One is basically an additional component that sits with the broadcaster and the kind of the tournament organizer and facilitates additional elements of stats and information that they can then incorporate into the broadcast. So the user will see that information that the tournament broadcaster or the game publisher is presenting back to them, but they won't have any control of that information. Our goal, you know, one of the initial vision of Esports One was that we wanted to put the control into the hands of the consumer and the fan when it comes to how they're watching and engaging in the esports broadcast. Like coming from kind of a traditional sports fan, where I'm a big UFC and NFL, you know, and college football, you know, kind of diehard fan. I really like some of the aspects that that UFC does. When you're watching a fight or something, you can track, you know, how many punches are being thrown and you know how far the person has been, you know, running around the octagon, and all these different elements that are interesting and further engage you into the action. But there's still a limit to how much, you know, how, like, where they kind of draw the line in terms of, you know, I want to now control if I don't want to see this information, or, you know, I want to compare, you know, how this person's fighting to maybe my favorite fighter. And same thing with football. That's not possible essentially right now. And there's a lot of, there's no control for the fan or the user to really dictate what their experience is when watching. And so we're looking to bring that to esports. We're starting at the broadcaster side, but our goal over the next course of the next 6 months is to release a consumer product that allows consumers to actually come to Esports One and control and interact and basically kind of completely change the way that they're watching these broadcasts and have full control over that.
Interesting. Sounds cool. I was a gamer as a kid, and then I somehow didn't keep up with it. I ended up, like, maybe in my early 20s, my first job playing Doom on the corporate network, you know, the corporate LAN. That Absolutely. Was incredibly fun. And then after that, I just sort of fell off. But yeah, it's amazing. Good stuff.
Games are fun. I mean, it's hard not to, it's hard not to being like not really just enjoy everything you're doing and part of it, being in this space. And that's one thing I've noticed is, like, esports is, you know, more it grows, the more attention it gets, the more that people want to be involved with the space, because, you know, it's hard not to want to be in the esports space, in the gaming space.
It's a growth market. That's a good thing. All right, let's talk about your funding. And it looks like you raised initial amount of money from something called Quake. What was Quake?
Sure. Quake Capital is an accelerator out of New York City. So when we were just getting started, and this was when we were actually called Esportsology at the time, and then we renamed to Esports One, we were looking, you know, we were basically kind of looking for that, you know, first step into to kind of fundraising. And there are a lot of elements that, you know, approaching kind of the investment space and the VC space that we were very, you know, unaware of or kind of green, I guess you would say. And so it made the most sense to be a part of an accelerator early on that could really kind of, you know, help, you know, where you're a bit rougher around the edges, whether it's, you know, from a legal standpoint. And, you know, the lawyer and legal team that we work with now, they came from Quake. They were introduced by Quake. You know, we have investors that were introduced to us from Quake, and so it was a great decision for us, and it was right. Quake Capital is their first cohort. They've gone on to probably two or three more successful ones, but
it's all focused on esports or all video gaming?
No, it's all just focused on startups. So it's a bit all over the space.
Okay.
We did another one from there, the MIT one, which was more gaming, VR, AR focused.
I saw Play Labs. Is that Play Labs?
Yeah, so that was Play Labs. It was out of MIT. So we moved out to Boston for 3 months and worked with MIT and Play Labs. Basically, it was a kind of a next step as an accelerator for us. We had already kind of I would say we were much further along than most of the companies there, but MIT, from a resource standpoint, and especially from a technology standpoint, it just made a lot of sense for us to be a part of this accelerator, just because of, you know, the access and the technology that we could utilize was at MIT, and so that really helped kind of, you know, skyrocket our progression a lot faster.
Did you initially found the company in Texas, and then did you move the team to New York, and then you move them to Boston, and now you're in LA, right?
The stuff in Texas, that was kind of my entry into the esports space, because that was when I started Leaguepedia. But I, from the time that I started Leaguepedia to where I am now with Esports One, I worked at a couple of companies kind of in between. And so the company was originally founded in New York City. I mean, when we started off as part of the accelerator there.
Okay, gotcha.
So, yeah, we've kind of jumped around a little bit from New York City to Boston and now to L.A. But, yeah, it originated in New York City.
Gotcha. Why'd you move to L.A.? What's the attraction there? Is that a big hub for esports?
Well, one, it's winter in New York City, and any way I can get out of the winter in New York City. No, I love Manhattan. I think Manhattan is one of the most just magical, just most energetic places I've ever lived, and kind of be in that environment is, you know, it gets you excited every day. But LA is where a lot of the game publishers, is basically where esports has kind of has originated from. It's where, you know, there's a lot of game publishers. There's a lot of the like the Overwatch League, the LCS for North America. It's all out of LA, and so it's important for us to be as close to, you know, that kind of esports epicenter as possible. So that we made a decision to make that move.
Cool. So, okay, after PlayLabs, then you raised a seed round. Tell us about raising that. Was that directly, you know, how did you do that? Was it introductions coming out of Quake and PlayLabs? And maybe tell us how much you've raised, too.
Sure. So we raised, our pre-seed part of Quake and MIT, we raised $250,000, kind of spread out on a convertible note. And then for our seed round, so we're kind of nearing the end of MIT PlayLabs, and we're kind of getting to our demo day, and we decided that now was the time to basically announce Esports One. We hadn't really announced it. We hadn't really kind of, you know, talked about what we were working on and the technology, and we've been working on it for about, you know, at that point, probably been working on it for about 9 months or so. And so we did a big press release. We created, had a landing page for signups to start getting people, you know, information and start communicating that to them, and that basically before our demo day at MIT. And so for the demo day, they bring in a lot of investors and VCs, but they also have the broadcast or the demos telecasted or streamed online. And so so we did our demo day, we did our big press release, and then from there, kind of the interest went from us being the ones that were having to aggressively go after VCs to now VCs are approaching us. And I think we were able to really kind of articulate and illustrate in the time frame and time window that we had, which was only 5 minutes during demo day to do a demo. But it got kind of the point across of, you know, this is all the excitement that we have about Esports One. Here's our technology. And, you know, we're on the right path. Now we just need the right partners. And so from there, we moved back to New York City, and we started receiving introductions from our investors out of MIT, basically that saying that they had been, you know, getting contacts from these people. They wanted to set up these introductions. So we probably, you know, just from demo day, we probably had, you know, did probably 30, 40 different phone calls with investors. Mm-hmm. Xseed was one of those kind of investors, VCs that reached out to us early on. So we kind of started that process of you know, talking to them and kind of going kind of introductions to sitting down, talking to doing a video call with our, you know, their whole team to flying out to LA, the whole process there. but yeah, I mean, MIT was, it really allowed us to, you know, start kind of take that next step through our fundraising.
Very interesting. So did you ever, well, actually, I had two couple questions. In terms of the pitch around demo day, did you have traction already with users or customers, or was the pitch really more on your technology? What was kind of the core focus of your pitch on demo day?
So as part of Esports One, and kind of going back to, you know, when I started Leakpedia, you know, we did, so as part of Esports One, we have another site called Esportspedia.
Okay.
And Esportspedia is basically a community ran Wikipedia site for esports, just like it sounds. And so we have a large user base that's already a part of Esportspedia. And it kind of complements, it's a complementary kind of, you know, part of our organization and as part of our company. But we already have had kind of, you know, had built a user base through Esportspedia.
How big was it?
At the time, you know, probably 2-3 million people, monthly users.
It's a nonprofit. It's not part of Esports.
Right. It's well, it's part of Esports. Well, Esportspedia falls under the umbrella of Esports One. But it's completely, you know, community ran, kind of community contributed. We have very little, if you know, next to no ads on the site. Like, our goal is to make Esportspedia, you know, the a community ran resource for the space, just like Wikipedia is, and you know, in general. So so we'd already built that traction, and then with Esports One, we had already started building excitement from various partners that we were working with, and we'll be probably discussing more of those, announcing more of those in the coming weeks. But you know, there were some pretty significant partners that were, that had taken note of what we were building and what we were doing, and they saw the, you know, they started wanting to, you know, kind of be a part of that conversation. And so, one thing that really worked in our advantage was we were getting outreach from these partners while we were getting outreach from investors, and so we were able to make introductions from the partners to the investors. And so one of our biggest, and probably the reason we got funding in the end, came down to just the, you know, how the interaction between our partners and our investors and how well those conversations
partners
went.
Partners being like video game makers or all
well, that,
kinds
yeah,
of stuff.
I mean, that's kind of, you can kind of, you know, video game makers, event publishers, tournament organizers, you know, a lot of, you know, streaming sites, stuff like that, a lot of big names within the space that, that, as an investor, you would know who that is, or you would recognize that company or that brand. And so if you see that, you know, if you're talking to someone that is essentially putting their reputation on the stake, as you you know, to back up this company that they're working with and say, hey, yeah, we've been, you know, they've demoed us their product. We've walked with them every step of the way on different aspects that we want to integrate. And, you know, we see amazing, you know, viability for what this is going to do, not only for us, but for the space in general. That really gets an investor excited. And so that helped us a lot. That helped really kind of take us to the next step. And we owe kind of a lot of gratitude to those partners for kind of having that much faith in us.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, you know, with you had this community built, you had these partnerships being built. Did you ever think about just raising a nice big round on Kickstarter or similar, and not diluting your equity? I mean, it seems
you
have this community, so why not go
that
route?
Because it's so important. Like, we've we did a big, when we announced our investment, ENIAC, who is another one of our investors, they provided us with a, you know, a PR team, basically, that was completely, you know, no charge to us, no fee. I mean, they won't, you know, we work with a PR team that's provided by ENIAC, that and so that's just kind of an example of, you know, that we want that sort of relationship with, we saw these investors a lot more than just, you know, kind of money men and women that were giving us, you know, funding. We saw them as, you know, there's a lot of areas that I know esports, I know product and content very well, but you know, there's a lot of areas I don't know very well. There's a lot of things I will, you know, I'm not, that I don't have, you know, the background or the insight, and I need someone, I need to work with someone that does. And so it's very important that we have, you know, investors and VCs that can provide that sort of benefit. If that means giving up equities, you know, that's great, you know, for us, because, you know, I know this is said a lot, but you know, a 100% of nothing is still nothing. And so 20% of a lot is still is a lot. So, and you know, the equity is just one part of the equation for us. It's but having that relationship, working with a team of investors and VCs that really believe in the business, really believe in the team, that's more important to us than anything. And so that's why we decided to go that route.
Sure. Good. So, were these guys XSEED, ENIAC, are they, I know ENIAC is, does a lot of like big data stuff. Are any of these guys video game or esports investors, or are they all more like data investors and that's their
a lot of them first time looking at esports. I mean, a lot of the VCs that we spoke with, there are a few that we spoke to that had investment in esports, but I mean, esports is still very much very new. And so, there's a lot of people that, a lot of investors that are seeing the kind of traction of the space and kind of the growth of the space, but they haven't kind of taken that next step and found the right fit. And so with XSEED and ENIAC, you know, they had actually spoken with a number of other esports companies in the past, but they just hadn't found the right fit for them. And luckily, you know, we came to be one of the, you know, kind of that fit that they were looking for. But they, you know, ENIAC started, they you know, used to focus mostly on mobile apps and mobile investments, and now they've made that shift to more data and analytics, more broad spectrum. XSEED is a, you know, they have their investments in a number of different industries, and this is both for ENIAC, XSEED, as well as Crest Capital. This is who's our other investor. This is all their first venture into the space.
Okay.
And so they're, you know, and they're really excited about it. And I'm making introductions, you know, to them fairly regularly of esports companies. Because they're looking to, you know, they're looking for this to be one of many investments into the space.
There's no dedicated esports venture firm that's emerged yet. That sounds like a.
No, there are. There are a couple. I know Bitcraft is an esports dedicated investment firm. I know there's, I believe there's probably like two or three. I can't remember the other ones off the top of my head, but I know that they're one of them.
Good. Good stuff. Do you ever think about taking strategic money or maybe that's something later on? And I'm thinking, I don't even know, maybe one of these league organizers or something like that. Would that make sense to raise money from someone in the space or not so much?
You're talking about from a VC that's in the space, or are you talking about like a company?
Yeah, you know, like a league organizer, maybe even a game vendor. I mean, these firms have small venture arms, you know, in some cases.
Yeah, some of them, and some of them have started making investments into the space. I know Riot was invested into Curse, or had investments into Curse Gaming at one point. I know there's a couple of them. It wasn't, I mean, that would have probably, you know, it really just wasn't one of those things that ever kind of came to be. Like, we weren't actively looking for going that direction. We did have a couple of conversations with a number of fairly large kind of brands within the space that were either they had some sort of either data component or technology component that wanted, you know, to either wanted some sort of tie-in to Esports One, and we just we wanted to kind of come at this as, you know, working with an investor, working with a VC team, and building out kind of your typical seed round. You know, and then start looking for other opportunities as we go along. But we took a more traditional approach.
So you talked to 30 to 40 or so investors, ended up with three. Are they all co-leads?
Those 30 to 40, I think we talked to just right after MIT. Overall, probably talked to, like, you know, I would say at least probably 100, 125. We actually did a spreadsheet and timeline, because we're kind of, I'm putting together kind of just essentially a blog where I'm just kind of going like week by week of kind of what, you know, what we went through, and we're starting up that. So we went through and chronicalized every single conversation, every single, or as much as we could kind of pull together. And yeah, I mean, it was upward probably, you know, more than 100, I would say, at least.
Interesting. So what are some of the mistakes you made? I mean, you know, congratulations on raising the round. I'm sure that was not easy, but what were some of the mistakes you made along the way? Maybe some of the stuff that you might.
Abundant number of mistakes. And that's one thing. That's one thing that I think is important. You know, for me, it helped me grow a lot as a founder, as someone that works with VCs, because coming at this as, you know, kind of rough around the edges, to use that kind of saying again. But, you know, in terms of dealing with investors at this scale, I made a number of mistakes early on. Some of the most notable ones was just sharing information about, you know, what VCs, other VCs you're talking to. You know, when you're talking to an investor and they ask who you're talking to, doesn't mean you have to actually divulge that information, because they then use that information and read, more than likely they know that investor or they know that VC, and so they'll reach out to them and they'll coordinate, and it doesn't put you in an advantageous position. And sharing valuation, how much you're looking for from evaluation right off the bat. You don't need, that's not, you know, really required. A lot of it came down, you know, was, we made kind of a bit of a mistake early on where we reached out to a bunch of different investors simultaneously and we only did this for, I think, a few of them, but we kind of, you know, did not a newsletter, but just kind of just reached out through email, trying to get people's attention.
You did like an email blast or kind of a spam
essentially,
blast.
Essentially, yeah, yeah. And I still kind of regret, because it didn't turn out poorly. We actually got a couple of calls from it, but it's just not seen very professionally. And it was something that honestly, I wouldn't do again, because it's not. I think, and at certain points, like we were not worried. We knew that this would happen. We knew we'd get the funding, but we were getting down to the wire at different points. And so, ensuring that, you know, and we were having to, you know, scrape by every step of the way and really kind of, you know, do whatever we could to get to that next stage and to that next phase, and ensuring that, and I learned this kind of, you know, through the process, but ensuring that that sort of, you know, that isn't communicated or seen by the investor, that they don't see that coming from you, that sort of, you know, desperation, sure. Which we weren't ever really in a desperation mode, but we had to be scrappy, obviously, and I think that was one of the most important aspects. And but, you know, showing confidence and strength, I think that helped us kind of as we got a little bit further on, is once the investor, you know, had that sense of us knowing what we were doing. Because once I hit about that halfway point of our investment, I kind of took the change from being, you know, making early mistakes, offering board seats to first time conversations for some reason. Like, I mean, I was like, you know, we'll do this and I'll give you a board seat. Like, that's not necessary. Like, there's just stupid things that I was doing that once I kind of made that shift from no longer just being completely, just completely ignorant of the different parts, I think the investors kind of felt that and understood that. And so that helped us. Yeah.
Well, a lot of rounds, you'll have that tipping point where it's like you're scrapping, you're desperate, whether you give off the vibe of being desperate or not. And then as you kind of, you know, gather enough commitments and interest and you kind of cross that tipping point, you know, then it shifts and you become more confident and investors can sense that too, right? So
it's, yeah, we didn't, making sure that, you know, not lying to the investors. Like, we had, you know, we had a lot of interest. Towards the end, we actually did have, you know, multiple term sheets coming in. And we were in a, you know, a lucky situation where that was the case. We lost one of our investors though, because we took too long. Like, we told them, you know, that we were expected to close this on, you know, at X point, and it took much longer than that. You know, the hat setting, and honestly, that's just come, that's not really lying. That's more so not knowing that the process would take that long.
Was it the due diligence process that was slowing things
it,
down?
It was essentially the due diligence. So we did it. We made sure that we had a very well put together data room, and that's one thing I you know, kind of advise any startup doing, is really kind of ensuring that your data room is put together, you know, very nicely. You have your deck and your financials and all your employment stuff, agreements with all your employees. I mean, our legal team basically kind of went through it and completely kind of turned it inside out, a lot of parts, because we were missing a good bit of stuff. But that helped significantly on the due diligence phase, because we already had all that prepared. But it was more so kind of getting the term sheet from different investors and the kind of turnaround from, you know, we're expecting a term sheet to come in at this point, but it's going to take much longer because, you know, maybe we think that we're further along in this conversation than we actually are. And so, yeah.
So maybe getting clarity on exactly where you're at in the process with each investor is, that's good.
Without feeling too pushy, like without feeling like overly pushy, was always like that line, the toe. It was like, I don't want to come off as like pushing them hard on it, but I do want some, you know, clarity and understanding of where we're at, basically.
As you get more term sheets, of course, you can be more pushy, right? And kind of dictate timeline and stuff like that. So, all right, let me ask one last question and I'll let you get back to building your business. You know, what advice would you tell yourself if you were doing this all over again, or to a new esports or gaming startup in the space looking to raise capital? What advice would you give them to, you know, to successfully raise money in this new market?
Yeah, so one of the biggest things for us that was you know, really helpful was having, you know, the accelerators helped us, because it not only did it kind of give us a kind of a starting point in terms of, you know, a foundation to build the company, but we had really strong mentors that we worked with there, and advisors and mentors. And so, you know, ensuring as a founder, and I get this a lot, I get people that reach out to me on LinkedIn or through email that just want to chat. They're starting up a new company, or they want some advice. And I always try to make time. I always put aside, you know, 1 to 2 hours a week to jump on calls with people that reached out to me on LinkedIn or reached out, just want to chat, they're graduating college and they're looking to get in this phase, or they're, you know, they had this new idea and they want to run their deck by me. And that sort of stuff, I think having that mentality of, you know, I'm coming, I don't know all the answers, and so I want to get as much input as I can, is very, you know, that shows to an investor that you know what your strengths and weaknesses are, and so you know what you're good at, and you know where you need to look to get help with, or, you know, where, what areas that you're lacking in. And I knew, and I took that mentality very early on, and surrounded myself with people that complimented me in the areas that I wasn't as strong in. And so as a founder, or, you know, as someone that's raising capital, kind of having that same sort of mentality of there's a difference between confidence and arrogance, and, you know, having confidence but knowing where your limitations are, I think is very valuable, and an investor will see that, and they'll you know, that's a strong kind of selling point if you're looking for investment.
Good stuff. Well, great. Any last comments or closing remarks or tips, advice?
No, I think that covers it. I mean, yeah, we have Esports One, Esportspedia. So, I mean, we're all over the web. So, and if you, you can also, you know, find me on LinkedIn as well if anybody has questions or anything.
Really great. All right, Matt. Well, I appreciate it. Congrats. Absolutely. On raising the round, and I wish you continued success for Esports.
All right, cool.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Nathan. Bye. Bye.